We're ready when you are, Sam.
Good morning. This is a meeting of the Title Setting Board pursuant to Article 40 of Title I CRS. The time is 9:07. The date is Wednesday, January 20th, 2016. We are meeting in the Secretary of State's Aspen Room, 1700 Broadway, Denver, Colorado. The Title Setting Board today consists of myself, Suzanne Steyer, Deputy Secretary of State, on behalf of Wayne Williams, David Blake, Deputy Attorney General, on behalf of Attorney General Cynthia Kaufman, and Sharon Eubanks. I have all the wrong names here, that's why. The designee of Director of Office of Legislative Legal Services, Dan Carton. Today we are meeting to consider title settings and rehearings. There are two titles for each measure. One is a statement and the other is a statement in the form of a question. Changes adopted by the title board to the first title in the staff draft will be considered adopted for the other title. For anyone who wishes to testify, there is a sign-up sheet on the back table. This hearing is broadcast over the internet from the Secretary of State's website, and public restrooms are located on the floor. When the title board considers a proposed initiative for the first time, the board will follow three steps. First, board members may wish to ask questions of the proponents. This is to ensure the board understands the proposal. Second, the board will determine if it has jurisdiction to set a title. In particular, the board must determine if the measure complies with the single subject rule prescribed in Article 5, Section 1, 5.5 of the Colorado Constitution, and Section 1-40-1065 Colorado Revised Statutes. This is because the board is prohibited from setting a title for a measure that contains more than one subject. Third, if the board determines that it has jurisdiction to set title, then the board will use a staff-prepared draft for discussion purposes. A copy of the staff draft is on the table. Generally, we will take all testimony first, then the board will discuss and vote after all testimony has been completed. A decision is reached by two of the three members of the board. Please take note, we are not concerned with the merits of any proposal here. We are only concerned with the setting of titles. Furthermore, we are not concerned with any legal or constitutional objections to the measures, except to the extent that such objections relate to the jurisdiction of the board to set titles or to the correctness of the titles and summaries themselves. Anyone who is dissatisfied with the decision of the title board may file a motion for rehearing with the Secretary of State within 7 calendar days. In the interest of brevity, speakers may incorporate remarks made on the record in prior hearings on similar measures. The first item on the agenda today is 2015-2016 number 60 food store license, and this is a rehearing. If the proponents could come forward and just state names for the record.
Trey Rogers on behalf of the proponents, Blake Harrison and Grayson Robinson, both of whom are here and have previously completed their affidavits. They did that at the time of the initial hearing.
Okay, thank you. And the motion for rehearing was filed by Mr. Gruskin. If you want to come forward and just identify yourself for the record, and then we'll...
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Mark Gruskin. Counsel for the objector, Gene McAvoy, registered elector of the state of Colorado.
Okay. And is there anything you want to add to your motion or any argument you want to make?
There is. Okay. If I could just turn to my seat for my notes. Let me just first say that I may be a little bit more exhaustive because I know that Mr. Blake was not able to be part of the earlier proceedings. So I might just go through what this measure does and what our motion addresses. This measure creates a new category of liquor license for grocery stores and convenience stores, in essence, and any other entity that sells at least 25% of its, has 25% of its gross income, excluding fuel sales and lottery ticket sales from food. The title that's been set, and I know that it is largely based on the title that was set for 51 and 52, is still flawed, even though the board made certain changes last time. First of all, it uses twice the phrase full-strength beer and wine. That's a phrase that simply doesn't exist, not in the initiative. It exists in the promotional materials of the proponents, as they as indicated on the exhibits attached to our motion. It's even a phrase that the United States Supreme Court has looked at as an extremely persuasive, highly influential advertising phrase. But it doesn't exist in the initiative. It's contrived. It's invented. It's created. And honestly, I would be hard-pressed, and I would guess the board would be hard-pressed, to define what full-strength beer and wine means. And to the extent that that's true, it is a phrase that has been created for purposes of voter appeal as opposed to voter understanding. And that is contrary to the board's direction in the statutes in terms of reflecting the measure in the title. And so we would suggest to you, not only is it an invented phrase that doesn't even exist and is beyond definition, it is beyond legal definition. It is a catchphrase because of its demonstrated use in the political campaign. Of course, if the board decides that non-textual references are appropriate, well, honestly, I think you've opened the proverbial Pandora's box, and you will have every proponent telling you what their measure, the technical parts, and even the non-technical parts of their measure mean, and how best to phrase them. And I think that is a path you do not want to go down. If you do want to go down that, well, then it seems to me you probably want to make sure that people know that virtually all convenience stores and all grocery stores are going to be eligible for these kinds of licenses. That is an expanded form of the argument that we made on 51 and 52. It evidently wasn't as compelling as it needed to be, but I still believe that the use of this phrase is error on the part of the board.
What would your suggestion be to go back to the malt and vinous liquors, or
it's the text of the statute, and it's the text of the amendment, and therefore it is the measure. Okay. So yes, that would be my proposal. Secondly, the change made by the board on 51 and 52 relating to the provision allowing the ownership of multiple food store licenses, including by the owners of certain retail liquor licenses, is misleading. There are so many forms of retail liquor licenses, as we point out in the motion. This measure is very clear that the multiple ownership is a function of this type of license, the food store license. The measure itself talks about the retail businesses licensed pursuant to this section. And so to be vague when you can be clear seems to me to be a concession that you do not need to make, and I would suggest it is error not to hold out to voters that there are types of retail licenses that may be affected when in fact they are not.
Mr. Grushkin, if I could ask a question regarding this argument. I guess I'm a little confused because the terminology in the measure talks about the license pursuant to this section versus licenses pursuant to the article. And I think that the reference to the owners of certain retail liquor licenses was supposed to be trying to encompass under the article in terms of those folks could also have now multiple ownership of licenses under the article. I mean, that's my understanding. It's not just that you have one company that has a food store license that then has another food store license for another location. It was my understanding that also that current licensees under the liquor code could also have an interest in a food store license. Am I misunderstanding?
Well, I guess Mr. Rogers will probably clear us up. I did not read the language that way. I read it simply to allow for the Section 425, which relates to food store licenses. So that was my understanding. But maybe we ought to wait and see what the proponents had to say, but it was my understanding that the section...
This food store license.
Food for, yeah, exactly, food store license section.
And maybe at some, and I don't know whether Mr. Rogers wants to come up now or address it.
Thank you, Ms. Eubanks. There is, anyone can own as many food store licenses as they wish to own under this measure. The provision that we're talking about is simply intended to provide that even the owner of a liquor license, drug store license, or a retail liquor license may also own as many food store licenses as they would like. Article 47, and in particular, those two subparts of Article 47 provide that currently owners of liquor license, drug store licenses, and owners of retail liquor licenses may only own that single license and may own no other license within Article 47. So the title is correct and is not misleading. It simply points out that it allows multiple ownership, including for certain retail license holders. In fact, the only two retail license holders that would, under current law, be prohibited from owning food store licenses are those two. So this listing in Mr. Gruskin's motion of all the other types of retail licenses that exist is really a red herring. Those licensees can own as many food store licenses as they like, whether or not we have the, notwithstanding any other provision of Article 47 language. Does that clear, answer your question?
And so, for example, you have a retail liquor store licensee could, under the measure, now also own a food store license.
Correct, as the title points out.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay.
Then to Mr. Rogers' point, if it is clear that there are only two forms of licensees that, in addition to food store licensees, that can have this multiple ownership, the title ought to be specific about those kinds of licensees rather than leaving the language vague as to certain retail licensees. Third, this measure takes out of the current licensing mandate that there be an establishment of the needs and desires of local inhabitants before the license is granted and makes it optional. that is a major change as most people perceive the licensing process. That is a major change. Typically, neighbors get to say via petitions and hearing whether or not they support a particular license. To omit this category of license, which frankly will be the most pervasive type of licensees, because there will be convenience, thousands of convenience stores and grocery stores, seems to me to be to underserve the voters who are going to rely on this ballot title, and therefore it seems to be it is an error on the part of the board not to include a reference to the fact that it is optional at the local level as to whether or not needs and desires have to be established. Likewise, and our motion addresses it, this measure treats as a presumptive and conclusive test the lack of an administrative or criminal proceeding as evidence of character and reputation. That is a new, dramatically new standard, and it is certainly not one, no matter what other civil litigation may exist, for instance, the establishment of that standard is noteworthy and ought to be part of the title. We've indicated, fifth, that the Supreme Court has formally written titles that require disclosure of a fee. We believe that is also required here. And lastly, an argument that was not raised in terms of 51 and 52, this issue of how the board did change the 51 and 52 title to include the reference to 25% of annual income to help make it clear what a food store is. However, food sales are a relatively minimal part of what happens at a convenience store. And all of what this definition says is if you take most of the revenue out of a convenience store revenue assessment, 25% of what's left is the minimum amount that has to be met. And as we indicated, based upon current statistics, that really means that in the overall context, it's in our, I think my wording was not fully accurate in the next last paragraph, but in the overall context, it's about 14% of sales. It's not 25% of sales. Because you have to exclude all those other dollars from the other revenue sources. And we think that in order to make that phrase clear, you have to include the phrase that comes from the initiative itself, so that it's clear that it's not just 25% of the overall sales, but it's 25% of maybe 40% of, excuse me, 30% of the overall sales of one of these entities. I don't have anything further, and hopefully my motion for rehearing was thorough enough that you don't have questions, but if I'm wrong, and you do, I'm happy to answer them.
Do you have any questions?
No. Thank
you. Right. Mr. Rogers, if you want to respond.
I do, thank you. So first, and primarily for the record and for Mr. Blake's benefit, 60 and 61 differ from proposed initiatives 51 and 52 that the board previously considered and for which the board also considered a motion for rehearing filed by the same objector represented by the same counsel. The board listened to most, if not all, of the arguments presented in the motion for rehearing and dealt with those, either rejected them or made changes to the title as the board saw appropriate. Now, to be sure, 60 and 61 are new measures, and the objectors have the right to come and argue the points made in the motion again. I simply point out that we're largely doing this exercise again for a couple of reasons. First, I'm going to try to, as Mr. Gruskin did, keep my remarks fairly short. You've heard, again, Mr. Blake, with the exception of you, you've heard most of these arguments before. The second reason I mention it is that I would ask the board, the chair, to incorporate the argument on 51 and 52 and the rehearing on those proposed initiatives in the record for these measures. Let me address then quickly, if I could, the arguments Mr. Gruskin's made this morning. With regard to the phrase full strength beer and wine, I'd like to note first that this is not something that was concocted by the proponents. In the staff draft on 60 and 61, and in fact on 51 and 52, the phrase full strength beer and wine was used. So it's not our invention. And in fact, it's not really even the staff's invention. It is common parlance. The alternative, as you heard Mr. Gruskin suggest, is that we use the terms exclusively, Venice liquor and malt liquor. The problem there is the public is certainly going to be confused by the use of those terms if they are used exclusively. They are arcane technical terms that are beyond the understanding of the voter. A little case law on this. The task of the title board, according to the Supreme Court, is to enable the electorate, familiar or unfamiliar with the subject matter of a particular proposal, to determine intelligently to support or oppose. How? The Supreme Court goes on to say, by setting a title that correctly and fairly expresses the true intent and meaning of the initiative. You know these standards well. That particular quote, those quotes are from In re title for 2009-10, number 45, that's Colorado Supreme Court 2010. In another case, the court expressly said, quote, that the board may, quote, use terms in the common understanding of most voters, close quote. That was in re title on taxation 3, Colorado Supreme Court 1992. That's exactly what you've done here in setting the titles for 60 and 61. You've used terms, full strength beer and wine, that are within the common parlance, as opposed to words like Venice liquor and malt liquor, which simply are not. A second point on this, it is true that Venice liquor and malt liquor are the terms used in the statute. The reason those are the terms used in the statute and in the initiative, the reason those are the terms used in the initiative is that the proponents chose to amend existing statute. They chose to drop this new license into the existing Article 47, which deals with liquor licenses in Colorado. We did that because that's good drafting, because it enables us to have a holistic, one article that holistically addresses liquor licenses in the state of Colorado. If you accept Mr. Gruskin's argument, you would create a perverse incentive. You would create an incentive for proponents to define their own terms. We certainly could have done that. We could have drafted this measure to regulate the sale of full-strength beer and wine in food stores. And we could have defined those terms, and we could have done it outside Article 46 and 47. We chose not to do so. We shouldn't be penalized for making good drafting decisions and drafting our measure in a way that makes sense and works within the existing statutory framework. Now, finally on full-strength beer and wine, to use the terms venison malt liquor would instead be confusing to the voter. Both of those terms include the phrase liquor, and they would tend to lead the voter to conclude that this measure allows the sale of what in common parlance is known as liquor, that is, spirituous liquor. That's your whiskeys and your gins and your vodkas. That is the impression that the use of only the terms venison malt liquors would create in the minds of the voters. So the title you have set complies with the Supreme Court case law, and it accurately communicates to the voters what this measure would do. Let me go on to Mr. Gruskin's next point, which is that the changes made at the initial hearing regarding ownership by certain retail liquor licensees is misleading. I think I addressed this in, for the most part, in my comments earlier. But again, I think you got it right at the initial hearing. There are only two retail liquor licenses that are affected. We don't need to list them out. To list them out would get down to a level of detail that is simply not required. The fact that the initiative would allow the owners of liquor license drugstores and retail liquor license retail liquor stores to own food stores is simply not a central feature of the measure, and it need not be further described in the title, certainly no further than it is already described in the title that's been set. Let me go on to the exclusion of the provision of the measure that requires a needs and desires hearing. So first, it is not an exclusion, it is not a removal of the needs and desires hearing. First, it leaves that decision to local authorities. Second, that provision only applies to existing 3-2 license holders. Those existing 3-2 license holders have already been through a local needs and desires hearing at the time that they obtained their Article 46 3-2 liquor license. So all that the measure is saying here is that for this 1,500 or so license holders in the state of Colorado who have already been through a needs and desires hearing, if the local authorities choose to not make them go through that a second time, that's okay. And I think that you will see when you consider the provision in that context, this is, again, merely a detail and does not need to be included in the title, lengthening it, adding to voter confusion, and really moving away from the central features of the measure to a detail. Same arguments apply to the permitted presumption. Again, the permitted presumption that an existing 3-2 license holders meets other requirements for a liquor license. Again, it only applies to the existing 3-2 license holders. Those 3-2 license holders have already met the requirements that we're discussing today. And so the measure simply says if the local authority wishes to not make those 3-2 license holders go through the process a second time, they can do that. So again, this is a detail. This is not a central feature of the measure and need not be included in the title.
So I guess I haven't done a lot of 3-2 licenses. I just don't remember those going through the needs and desires, but that's part of the statutory structure now.
That's what you're saying?
Yes.
Okay. So a convenience store that has a 3-2 license is required under current code to do a needs and desires?
I certainly believe that's the case. I can...
Maybe when we take a break, you could just, if you could get me a site, because I just don't personally remember that happening, and it may be when I did licensing authorities, those were handled administratively or something, but I just don't recall that. So I just like it for the record.
We'll take a look at that and, okay, and get you a site.
Thanks.
Mr. Gruskin next mentioned that we should include the fact that we're imposing a fee. The case law is pretty clear on this, that the creation of a fee need not, it's not a central feature, it need not be included in the title. Every type of retail license under every type of license, wholesale, retail, importer, manufacturer, includes a fee. There would certainly be no voter surprise to learn that in addition to the dozens of other types of licenses granted under Article 47, this one also includes a nominal fee, I think $100 to $150 fee. It is a detail. I am sure that the proponents would like to see, you know, every measure of this title included, so that instead of having a 9-line title, we have a 20-line title, thus confusing confusing the voters. It's just not necessary under the case law, under the standards that this board applies when setting title. Finally, objectors suggested that the change to the language around food stores remains misleading. Well, you know, the request in the motion for rehearing on 51 and 52 was that the percentage of food sales should be included. And the board did that. And now the objectors have come back to say, well, despite the fact that that's what we asked for, it didn't go far enough. You need to now include more details about what a food store is. I would submit that you've done enough. You've told the voter in the title that a food store is one that gets 25% of its annual gross revenue from the sale of food. Are there exclusions? Yes, there are exclusions. Those are in the measure. If the voter isn't satisfied with the language in the title, with the information provided in the title, the voter can certainly go and parse it out a little more finely by reading the measure itself. With regard to the title you've set, it is sufficient. You did what the objectors asked you to do on 50 and 51. No further kind of language around what a food store is necessary. Unless you've got questions, that's all I've got.
Any questions? No? Do you want to add anything, Mr. Gruskin?
Mark Gruskin. First, as a general matter, I take umbrage at the suggestion that the goal of this motion, or that the goal of the motion on 51-52 was to confuse voters. Obviously, the board found merit in a number of the things that were suggested. As the board knows, I wasn't able to attend the last hearing, and I would have asked for additional clarity had I been here. But nonetheless, the purpose here, and I think it was raised particularly as to the imposition of a fee, is to create a 20-line title. Well, let's see. If you inserted a phrase, imposes a fee upon food store licensees, I don't know that you get to 20 lines. And I raise that in a somewhat sarcastic manner, because I think that the point isn't of this motion to do anything other than to contribute to voter understanding. Two quick points. First, full strength beer and wine. I'm not sure I can add a lot to what we have said, except for the fact that the use of full strength beer and wine was raised as a phrase in the legislative review and comment hearing. If that's where staff got it from, that's very possible. But at no point have the proponents of this initiative actually tried to define what full strength means. And it is a term that is left open to public interpretation. We are not trying to penalize them for their drafting processes. That was then, this is now. We simply want the title to be reflective of the initiative. The only other issue that I would raise for you at this point relates to the very last issue addressed. We do believe that the added detail about how the annual gross income is calculated is helpful. There's no suggestion on the part of the proponents that our numbers are wrong or that the industry studies cited are incorrect. The point is, these are called food stores, again, for, I guess, drafting convenience. But they're really not. If you sell 14% of everything that you put out for sale and you call yourself a food store, it is at least something that ought to be known to voters so that they don't believe that this is simply a supermarket sweeps kind of measure. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. Griskin, I just wanted to clarify. I think at the last rehearing you had raised single subject, but you didn't this time, and I just wanted to make sure that you're not intending to.
We did as to number 52,
okay.
And we are as to number 61,
okay.
But we're not raising
but
it.
But not yet. In this one.
Correct.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Yes.
Yeah, that would be
thank
perfect.
You. Sorry, if I could, Madam Chair,
sure.
You asked for information about whether needs and desires is required for 3.2. Let me give you a couple of sites on that.
Okay.
So 1246.104 1C provides that a retailer's license shall be granted and issued to any person, partnership, association, organization, or corporation qualifying under section 1247.301. And then goes on. 301 is then the provision of 1247.301 is the provision that requires a wants and desires or needs and desires hearing for an Article 47 liquor license. So yes, the same needs and desires process required for liquor licenses is also required for 3.2 license.
Okay, and just so I can clarify my position. So I get that on the ones that exist, but theoretically there could also be new food stores that come in, didn't go through needs and desires because it's new construction or whatever, and they could obtain one without doing needs and desires.
No, the exclusion from needs and desires and the presumption that they've met the other requirements is only available to existing 3.2 licensees.
Okay. All right. Perfect. Thank you.
And if the board would allow me, this is Shane Metz, and I'm the attorney for Coloradans for Convenience. First time that we've appeared before this board, but my clients are a coalition of convenience store owners, which are primarily individual business owners integral to their communities. I wanted to make two quick points. First, we have been part of the drafting process since the beginning. We do support all of Mr. Rogers' arguments before the board. I would just point out two things. First, the insistence of Mr. Griskin on using malt and vinous liquor is really an attempt to use prohibition-era terminology in what is hopefully a modern-day proposal. And secondly, my clients are quite troubled by what we see as invented numbers. In the motion for rehearing, we're in the business of being convenience stores, and all of a sudden Mr. Griskin is citing what he purports to represent as industry figures. I think those are fairly in dispute here and should not be considered by the title board unless you want to turn your consideration into an evidentiary hearing, in which case we're happy to bring forth the actual facts. And just to underscore Mr. Rogers' last statement, Article 46, which is the 3.2 licensing article, does require a needs and desires hearing for a new 3.2 licensee. And a second needs and desires hearing in the context of this initiative when converting to the new food store license doesn't need to be mandatory. It needs to be permissive on the side of the local licensing authority. So if you have any questions, we'd be happy to answer them here. but we stand in support of Initiative 60.
Okay, thank you. Any questions for the right? Is there discussion by the board? Do you want to incorporate your comments from last time, or do you want to make them anew?
I think I can just do it sort of anew,
okay.
Very briefly. I don't think my position is a surprise to anyone. I do agree with Mr. Gruskin's first argument about the terminology used. I think that the terminology should follow the statutes. I still think that it can be, the title can be drafted in a way that it still explains to the voters in terms of the type of beer and wine that is at issue with the measure. But I do think that the terminology should track the statutory terminology. I'm afraid that the full-strength beer and wine terminology is a catchphrase in terms of trying to elicit a favorable response, full strength being something better than less than full strength, and also in terms of potentially being used as an advertising slogan in a campaign. So that's my position on that argument. The only other argument that I would agree with in Mr. Gruskin's motion for rehearing is the argument, the last argument under F, in terms of the description of the income that's used in the calculation of whether someone qualifies as a food store licensee. I do think, regardless of the numbers, that's really not important to me. For whatever reason, the measure itself excludes the income from fuel products and lottery ticket sales, and I think that that should be indicated in the title.
Okay. Well, we had a lot of discussion at the last couple of hearings about the term full-strength beer and wine, and I guess I'm pretty much with Mr. Rogers on the notion that if our goal is to track the initiative rather than to use terms of common meaning, then what we essentially force proponents into is rewriting, you know, the liquor code into a new title. And so, you know, if Mr. Rogers could have solved that problem by just, you know, pulling all of his stuff out and putting it in a different article and calling it beer and wine, would we be having this discussion? And that's kind of what resonates with me, is that we're trying to use terms of common meaning. And I think I agree that if we track the language that's in the statute, it's going to be confusing to the voters who don't know what malt and vinous means. They don't distinguish it from spirits. And so I don't know how else to describe it in a common way. I think at some point we have to refer to beer and wine. So even if we said concerning the sale of full-strength malt and vinous liquors, then in the next line we'd still have to say commonly referred to as beer and wine, or we'd be confusing the voters. So I don't really have a problem keeping it the way that it is, because I think they're terms of common meaning. I don't think they're catchphrases, because I don't think they elicit necessarily a reaction one way or another. They're just things. It's not like we're saying they're good things or bad things. People have different feelings about full strength alcohol. So I'm comfortable with that. On the issue of allowing the multiple food store licenses, I think that we adequately covered that. The needs and desires, I don't see that as a major issue, given that, one, it's not something that they removed. It's a consequence of what exists now and what will exist later, but I don't think it's this board's duty to describe every change that occurs from current law. And I think it was adequately explained by the proponents that, in fact, this isn't even a
major procedural changes. All those groups will have already gone through that. The reputation character record, I don't think that's central to the measure. And the imposition of a license fee, I also don't think that that's central. I think imposition of license fees become central to measures when the license fee is then going to be dedicated to a certain fund, or it's really part of the purpose. And this is just a fee that is not central. Just everything has a fee attached to it. Annual gross income, I mean, I'm fine adding those, you know, a couple of things in there. I mean, as to any argument that, you know, we may or may not be trying to avoid a 20-line measure. I don't think lines have ever mattered much, or Amendment 66 would have never looked the way it did. I think the board is trying to capture everything that's central. And so, you know, I don't really consider the length one way or the other. But I am fine with this other inclusion in F.
So I'll make the record, since I wasn't here before. I think I agree with most of what the chair has discussed. The most sympathetic argument, or the argument that I'm most sympathetic to, is regarding the catchphrase. But I think I disagree. But for the record, let me explain why. The argument in the rehearing, by the way, just also for the record, I'm up here looking at case law. I'm not up here playing playing games or something, that there's no specific meaning. I mean, I think, of course, there is a specific meaning that comes along with it. It conveys generally the purpose, or I don't think we'd be having this discussion if it was really that amorphous. As to the second argument, or let me jump to the third argument, the board is inconsistent in using non-textual references to the title. I don't think it has to come out of the proposal. I think as a general matter, we do try and adhere to that because it's the safest route, but I don't think we've ever held ourselves to that absolute standard. I certainly have not. Again, I think that's a good best practice. I don't think it's a requirement. As to the second argument, that it's a political catchphrase, again, this is the one where I'm most sympathetic. But as to the arguments here, relating to whether or not this is a campaign slogan, it doesn't have to be exclusive. I think you can certainly use words out of the title for a campaign. The question about whether or not it's a catchphrase is really whether or not it's prejudicial, or it invokes some kind of reaction, or generates some kind of favoritism to one side or the other. I simply don't think that it does. In at least one of the cases that I was most familiar with, and I'm going to quote In Re Ballot Title 2013-14, numbers 85, 86, 87, where it says it tracks the language of the text of the proposed initiative. I've already discussed why I don't think that's a requirement. It is merely descriptive, and it neither evokes emotion nor engenders voter confusion. And I think that's the standard that I want to apply to this. So I think it satisfies the fact that it is not a catchphrase. So I think I made the record on the one argument that I was most persuaded by, I can't agree.
Do you have any opinion on the adding in the excluding lottery and gas?
I don't think that it's necessary. Clarity is always helpful, but I don't think it's necessary.
You want to put it in?
Sure. Okay. At least in terms of what it would look like.
And sure.
So I believe on line 5, after income, you'd want to insert a comma and say something along the lines of excluding fuel product and lottery ticket sales, comma. I mean, we can put it in terms of excluding income from, if you think that's helpful, but That pretty much, I think, tracks the way it's described in the measure. So I would move this language as adopting the motion for rehearing in regard to the argument set forth in F, 2F.
Okay. I'll second it. All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
It passes unanimously. So you're going to need to make the motion on the rehearing because, or,
I don't care.
Oh, you're fine adopting this.
I don't.
It's not enough for you to vote no.
No.
Okay.
I don't think I'm going to win over either of you on the argument in A. And so if you're ready to, unless there's any other changes that you wish to make, then make a motion on the rehearing. Okay, so I would move that we deny the motion for rehearing on initiative 1516 number 60 in all regards except for the argument F that we already took action on. And in that regard, we grant the motion for rehearing.
I'll second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right. That takes us to the rehearing on initiative 2015-2016, number 61, food store license.
Madam Chair, Trey Rogers representing the proponents, Grayson Robinson and Blake Harrison, both of whom are here and have previously executed their affidavits.
Thank you. All right, Mr. Gruskin.
Mark Gruskin on behalf of the objector. Madam Chair, members, the motion for rehearing on 61 is the same as the motion for rehearing on 60, with the exception of the single subject argument raised on pages 1 and 2. Basically, sorry.
So for the record, we'll go ahead and incorporate the arguments made in the prior on 60, and then if you want to just talk about a single subject, that'll save your voice.
You anticipated my next, comment, which is probably frightening for you. But the concern on 61 is that it doesn't seek a change to the Colorado Revised Statutes. It seeks multiple changes. Number one, to create this grocery store, convenience store, liquor license category. And secondly, basically to do away with the 3-2 off-premises license altogether, which is the line that you see on, or the verbiage that you see on line 10 that states, and I quote, eliminating licenses to sell 3.2% beer for off-premises consumption. Those are different changes, and they achieve different things, and you could do them separately, and you could find, I think, constituencies for doing each of them, but that doesn't mean that those constituencies are the same. We think that there is, without running you through our motion, no necessary and direct connection between them, and therefore we think that, again, without running you through our motion, just the press has even treated these two issues differently in announcing the measure. One major outlet talked about grocery stores, and one major outlet talked about 3.2 beer. To the extent that the popular perception generated, at least by the media so far, is that there are two different issues, we think that is correct. We think that you should allow the proponents to do this in two separate measures, and would ask that you find that there are multiple subjects. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions?
Mr. Gruskin, I just, clarification. My understanding of the measure, it just gets rid of the license for 3-2 beer for off-premises consumption.
Correct.
So other types of establishments that maybe serve 3-2 beer on premises.
A bar, a restaurant.
Right. That they those still exist.
That's correct. I think your line 10 is an accurate statement of what it, of what this measure does.
Okay. Thank you.
All right.
Thank you very much, ma'am.
Mr. Rogers, did you want to respond?
So, Madam Chair, you've already, I believe, incorporated the previous arguments from 52 here. And so with that, I'll just add a few comments. Of course, the single subject requirement that the Supreme Court tells us must be liberally construed to provide access to the ballot. Also, we have to look at what the Supreme Court is has told us are the purposes behind the single subject requirement to avoid voter surprise and fraud. That's not a problem here. The title very clearly tells the voter that there would be this 3-2 repeal as part of the measure. Supreme Court's also told us that a purpose for the single subject requirement is to avoid piggybacking. This is not piggybacking. The repeal of the 3-2 off-premises licenses is properly necessarily connected to the goal of selling full-strength beer and wine in food stores. You can't have two licenses at one premises, so you could not sell under current law or under the measure. You couldn't have two licenses. So if a store is going to avail itself of the opportunity to sell full-strength beer and wine, it necessarily has to give up the 3-2 the 3-2 license. So for those reasons, we think, again, that you got it right the first time. There is only a single subject for initiative, proposed initiative 61. Thanks.
Yes, one question, and I think I asked you this back on, was it 51 or 50?
52.
52, yeah. That while many or some 3-2 licensees now could roll over as food store, there could potentially be 3-2 licensees that don't qualify as a food store, that this measure would eliminate their ability to sell 3-2 beer for off-premises consumption. Is that correct?
That is possible. I think the number would be vanishingly small, you know, out of a universe of 1,500. Again, I think my answer last time was maybe single-digit number of stores, which is we think just not enough to create an entirely new subject. It's simply not the intent of this measure to take away the opportunity to sell 3-2 from those handful of stores. This is part of the larger scheme that the initiative is undertaking, and that is to authorize the sale of full-strength beer and wine in food stores.
Okay, thank you.
You have something, Mr. Gerson?
I do. You know, it's ironic in the conversation over number 60 that Mr. Rogers correctly pointed out that the exceptions, the licensing exceptions for entities currently with 3-2 licenses are liberalized. If you currently have a 3-2 license, you don't have to, unless the local licensing authority requires it, go through another needs and desires test, even though they're different products. I mean, and that's the point. And to the extent that the suggestion is that, well, you wouldn't want to have two licenses, well, that's, of course, that's true. They're going to give up one license for the other license. That doesn't mean that you have to abolish that license for any other entity that would seek to have it. But they are both using the 3-2 license penumbra of having some sort of blessing for liquor sales. And then, on the other hand, saying it is an irrelevant license, let's abolish it. And I would just suggest to you that when it comes to community decision making, I think Mr. Rogers' number, when he talked about the number of entities with 3-2 licenses, about 1,500 right now, 1,500. Those 1,500 neighborhoods have a right to know that the nature of the product being sold is different. And therefore, the point that we raise about what needs to be in the title is underscored by the discussion of Mr. Rogers as to both 60 and 61. And we think as is the point about multiple subjects. Thank you.
All right. Any discussion?
I don't think so in terms of incorporating our comments from number 60, that I think the board's previously talked about single subject and found it to be a single subject. I'm still comfortable with that determination. And so the only change would be in regard to the argument set forth in F of the motion.
Right.
And whether we could make the same change on 61 as we did on 60, which was after income. Yeah.
And I think we dealt with this in terms of the single subject at a rehearing on
52.
So that argument will be incorporated. And clearly the board believed it was a central feature, but I'm not sure that that makes it a separate subject, which is why this question reads much differently than the other one. And I think that we described that feature in the measure, and there would be no surprise to the voters.
Right. So I would move the language that appears on lines 5 and 6.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Anything else?
Nope.
Okay. Then I would move that we deny the motion for rehearing on initiative 1516, number 61, to all arguments except for that in F, which we made the change. And for that reason, we would grant the motion in that regard only.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right. The next item on the agenda is initiative 2015-2016, number 47, Iran divestment of public funds. And if the proponents could come forward and introduce themselves for the record. No. Good.
Morning. You ready?
Yeah, sure.
I'm Mark Waller, proponent for Initiative 47, and Polly Lawrence is here as well. She's the other proponent.
All right. If you could start by telling us a little bit about your initiative, and then in particular what you believe the single subject is.
Yeah, so our goal here is to ensure that our public funds are divested from Iran and companies who do business with Iran. It's very similar to an initiative that went through the legislature several years ago regarding divestiture from the Sudan. And so it's, you know, a pretty simple initiative, pretty simple proposal. The goal is to ensure that we are not investing public dollars in Iran or companies who do business with Iran.
Okay. Any questions from the board?
I don't know that I have any questions other than there may be a typo that I wanted to at least bring to our attention.
Gosh
darn it.
We can't do anything about that, though, can we?
Usually, I thought we could. The title board can make corrections.
Oh,
if,
that are just
if it's really obvious.
Okay,
yeah.
All right.
It can't be a really obvious typo.
It is.
Oh, darn it.
Well, we all three.
Right, all three of us.
All right.
At least that shows we read it. But I just want to confirm, on page 1 in section 201, subsection 8, which is the definition of Iran restricted company in paragraph A, there appears to be two INs, INs. It says more than 10% of the company's revenue produced in or assets located in Iran.
That's an obvious typo.
And so I think that it has been past practice for the title board that we're able to correct that.
Okay.
At least in terms of obvious
All right.
Errors. So I just wanted to confirm that. In terms of the meaning of public fund or funds and tying it into the existing statutory definition, the concept here, although it, I don't know that it applies to the state treasurer, but most of the other entities we're talking retirement funds, although then there's also RTD, and then there's the state treasurer. So in terms of this concept of public funds, what kind of monies or entities are we talking about in terms of the scope of the types of monies that aren't supposed to be invested in these types of companies doing business with the government of Iran? Can you?
Yeah, I mean, I think, I'm not sure I completely understand what your question is, but I think we're just trying to define public fund the way it's been defined previously in statute.
Well, and the reason I'm asking is if we get past single subject, trying to get a better understanding, because I'm not sure that right now the title really explains that to voters in terms of the types of monies or entities or officials that is subject to this restriction. And so that's why I'm asking if you could explain a little better what, because it's obviously not all public monies, but a way to describe it that might be meaningful to the voters in terms of trying to explain that in the title.
All right, so once again, you're looking for a specific list of public funds that we're talking about, or how we talk about those public funds in the title?
Well, I'm trying to, I mean, I know what the statute says. I mean, I know it lists the state treasurer, it lists PRA, it lists, I think, the county retirement, mm-hmm. It lists the board.
Police Pension Association.
And then the board of the regional transportation district. So, I mean, that doesn't encompass just retirement funds. It's something broader, because obviously the state treasurer, for example, or RTD, they handle funds other than mm-hmm. just retirement funds. And so, because to me, you know, the term public funds isn't very meaningful to voters. And so I'm trying to see if there's a way to grasp what we're talking about here in a way that we might later on be able to incorporate into the ballot title, because I think that's something that may be lacking. And so I'm just trying to get a better grasp. I mean, for the state treasurer, I assume that means any state monies.
Mm-hmm.
For RTD, any monies that they may have and invest, and then the retirement funds. But I can't just say retirement funds, because that's not accurate.
Well, I wonder if it'd be appropriate, since it's not a huge list, to say public funds and list them specifically.
And that's obviously one option. Sometimes all that detail isn't necessarily helpful to voters either. And so that's sort of the debate in terms of, is it a little bit or a whole bunch, in terms of the amount of detail. So at this point, you might lean towards just specifying what public funds we're talking about, that might be one way to clarify it in the ballot title.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'm not sure, you know, what a better way to specify what public funds we're talking about would be, other than to list them specifically, because you correctly point out that, you know, it encompasses a little bit more than just retirement funds. So, you know, what's the best way to educate the voters on that, or you give the voters the most information possible without presenting too much information moving forward? And I think maybe the best way is just to list what those funds are.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions?
Maybe I have a question for Ms. Eubanks. So is your concern deriving from the fact that most of the public funds are retirement funds, and there's only a small subset of public funds that are non-retirement funds?
At least that would be my understanding, because if we're talking state funds, that that would be monies other than retirement funds. I mean, yeah. Obviously, I'd like an easy way to describe this. To say public funds, I'm not sure that that really explains much to the voters. And so that's why I was sort of inquiring to get a better understanding of the scope of the measure so that maybe we could make it a little more explanatory without overly being detailed.
If we get to title, setting the title and pass single subject, I suspect, well, I may have a suggestion that you can consider.
Okay.
All right. Is there anyone here who wishes to speak on the issue of single subject on this measure? No. All right. Okay. Then discussion by the board on the single subject.
I think the measure contains a single subject, and I'm ready to do a motion.
Okay.
If the other board members are comfortable with that.
Sure.
Okay. I would move that we find that proposed initiative 1516, number 47, contains a single subject and that we proceed to set a title.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right, that passes unanimously, which takes us to the title. We have the staff draft up. Mr. Waller, do you have any comments on the staff draft?
Just one. I we're really pleased with this title overall. I think the only thing that perhaps we could do slightly better is give a bit of an explanation of what divestment is. I worry that that's a very legal term, and that's something that's going to be hard for voters to understand. And so I think we talk about divestment in a couple of places. In the first paragraphs, or in the first paragraph at line 2 and 3, an amendment to the Colorado Revised Statute requiring certain public funds to take divestment action. I think it might be better if we talk about, as opposed to divestment action, talk about prohibitions against investment. I think that's an easier to understand terminology than divestment actions. And there's similar language in the second paragraph.
Mr. Wall, would you make the same change to the other places in the title where the word divestment is used? So you'd have it in all was 4 or 5 places there?
Yeah, I'm sorry. That's right.
Anything else?
That's it.
All right. So you want to take up this public fund issue in the single subject?
actually, other than maybe taking out, and I don't know that certain is very helpful, but if you, and trying to incorporate, and I'm sorry, but I have to call you Representative Waller.
No, it's tough, isn't it? Occupational
hazard. You're always a representative to me. Taking your suggestion into account that perhaps the statement of single subject, instead of being a requirement, would be going the opposite way of saying something like prohibiting the investment of public funds in companies that conduct specified business operations with the Islamic Republic of Iran. And then I think once we get to the latter phrases, maybe then we deal with the terminology about public funds. I'd hate to, unless Mr. Blake has an easy solution to that, explaining the terminology, I think that would be better suited for later on in the title to explain what public funds we're talking about.
Yeah, I was focused on the second use of it, but what was your proposed change?
So in terms of the single subject statement, it would be prohibiting the investment of public funds in companies that conduct specified business operations with the Islamic Republic of Iran.
I'm sorry, I was confused. So you're going to Representative Waller's point?
Yeah, I think okay. if we go that direction, that to say requiring, I mean, and when you're talking about a prohibition, it just seems like you should rework it at that point. And I would save the details about what public funds for a later clause in the title. So I would move that language as it appears on lines 2 and 3 of the screen.
Second. All those in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Aye. But we're going to do that same thing at every other place,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
I'm not sure it works in the other places.
Yeah, you might have to tweak that a bit. So the next line, defining those companies as RON restricted companies, I don't think those really helps us. Which companies?
Such.
Companies that are doing business with them? Or... what are we defining as a RON restricted?
It's companies that have a certain amount of investment in Iran or in oil production activities in Iran, other energy production activities in Iran.
Okay. Because now we're saying we're prohibiting the investment of funds in companies. I mean, should we just say defining companies that...
Is it really defining them or just identifying them?
Identifying.
About just identifying such companies.
And I still have trouble with the certain public funds because I don't think the definition of public fund is very helpful. Because to say it means the state treasurer might, does that just mean the treasurer's business? I mean, I'm not sure most people understand that all the state funds go through the treasurer, and they may think, so why don't all these other departments, you know, does that mean that our office and the governor's office, does that mean everyone else can invest?
Well, I think under the statutory scheme, usually the state treasurer has the responsibility
right.
for investing
right.
state
but,
funds, not the Secretary of State or
yeah,
the
I know.
Individual
I just
department,
don't know if...
But whether sort of state monies is a better way
yeah.
of describing that. But Mr. Blake might have this magical solution
yeah.
to
no,
our
I'm not
problems
sure that, I'm
here.
Not sure I do. I committed to working through it with you. I was going to suggest that you just clarify with a clause, a subclause, requiring certain public funds, including but not limited to state retirement funds. But even state doesn't work. So I was just going to say
yeah.
retirement funds.
Or public or government or
government retirement funds or government retirement investments. I mean, my point, the reason I asked you the question was you seem to be focusing on the fact that public funds didn't convey the idea that the majority of that definition included retirement funds and then some other subset that you really couldn't identify. So if that's the concern and you want to clarify that, then we should talk about retirement funds with, but not to the exclusion of the whatever the delta is there. And requiring certain public funds is fine with me. It's defined in the measure. But I understand your point. I'm sympathetic to it. But I think if you clarify that public funds is primarily focused on retirement funds, that we get the clarity I understood you were searching for.
Yeah. I mean, part of the difficulty is the fact that for most people, public funds, they might think of municipal, school district, county.
Mm-hmm.
And other than the county retirement aspect, those types of monies or any other special district other than RTD, that those are all public funds. And so the idea is that it only is applying really to the monies of the state and monies of RTD, and then sort of the retirement funds that are the government retirement funds. That's what I'm sort of struggling with in terms of how much detail to give well, them, because to me, public funds is a very broad term, just stand alone.
Well, maybe I shouldn't presume it, but I certainly presume that's a null set. I guess I hope this local school district is not investing in Iran. So I don't see the confusion there, because if they are, does your measure cover that?
I don't think so, no. I don't think it covers.
So the state can invest in Iran, but others right. cannot?
Well, I mean, I think the measure covers state entities or and right. the well-delineated public funds, and it doesn't mention school boards. But I would say in this circumstance in the state of Colorado, my understanding is that school funds come from PARA. I mean, their retirement association is PARA. And so I don't know that school boards have a tremendous number of funds that they're investing in the first place.
Right.
I don't see it as being a huge boon to the Islamic Republic of Iran to have, you know, the Callahan School Board investing in.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think they are. But I certainly, when you say state treasurer, that would sweep in any state dollars that are flowing anywhere in the state. I mean, that's my understanding. And so maybe I was a little flip in using local, but they're getting state dollars. Every public school in the state is getting state dollars. And the provision seems to go to stopping money flowing to Iran or somebody profiting from an action or in contract or in privity with Iran, including the state. So I actually understood it to include the state.
Well, and I guess let me provide some clarity there. You know, it's we're not talking about, you know, a local school district actually engaging in the act of investment. We're talking about funds that go through the treasurer's office that would be invested. So it's not like the school board has the authority to engage in that investment activity. If those dollars flow through the state treasurer's office, then the treasurer obviously engages in the investment activity.
But again, to be clear, you don't care whether if it starts in Iran or ends in Iran. If it comes through the state,
that's
you intend
right.
to catch it.
Absolutely.
And that's the role of the treasurer. If this prohibition were in place, then the treasurer then has the responsibility to identify those through the listing and through the other processes here,
right.
And then stop it. So
I
still think it may be a large footprint that is covered. I just think it's remarkably unlikely that it's going to catch a lot of dollars. Does that make sense?
But you're going to catch them at the city level, right?
You're going to catch them at lots of levels under this definition.
Well, but no, you're not.
You're not.
I'm not. You're not under a public fund. Yeah. You're going to catch the dollars that flow through the state.
Right.
So you're not going to catch any of the dollars that flow through the city, nor are you going to catch dollars that flow through city retirement funds. And we're not really just talking about, yeah, like you said, we're not talking about just investments directly with Iran. It's you have a retirement account and your ICMA account is investing with company X who happens to be in business with Iran, right?
That's
so,
correct.
You're not going to catch a lot of public funds that aren't flowing through the state.
Right. But you're going to catch any funds germinating with the state.
Right. But those
flowing to locals.
Right. So state funds, I think, is
saying that there isn't a lot beyond that.
Well, I mean,
where
local governments, you know, you got property tax, you got sales tax.
Oh, they don't
I
get
mean,
much
there's
from
all sorts
the
of
state.
Other revenue sources, you know, how much they're spending versus they have available for investment. I don't know. I'm just saying they're not included under the scope of the statute. And so while the lion's share may be the pension, I'm just concerned about the terminology giving the idea that it's much broader than what it actually is and whether or not we should provide more clarity in that regard. Not that it's easy. I mean, you could talk about, you know, monies of the state of Colorado and the regional transportation district, that because that's not limited to retirement, and then.
So that's obviously the purpose of what CERTN is supposed to do, is identify that there's a limited sum set. But if you're and requiring state funds and including certain retirement funds.
In terms of government, you know, government retirement.
Because what you're trying to exclude then is non-retirement, local, whatever.
Yeah, I mean, that's what you would get to, because you got you got the firefighters and the police in here, but you don't have, so you can't even say state retirement funds. You can't say all government funds, because some are in or some are out, and they're different subsets.
Then requiring, again, state funds or state monies or something, but state, including certain retirement funds.
Yeah.
Because they're listed specifically,
right, certain,
in the measure.
Right.
The certain is modifying the
wrong
thing.
It would be money of state funds, RTD, and certain government retirement funds.
Yeah, I mean, it's inartful, whether you, in terms of going to talk about defines public funds, something along those lines, to be monies of the state of Colorado, the regional transportation district, and certain government retirement entities or organizations.
Yeah. I'm fine with that.
That's fine. That's what they are.
Proponents fine with that?
Yeah, I'm fine with that.
Rather than dumping the language in where you have it, mm-hmm. Because I think that's a long phrase as it is when it's talking about all the requirements, whether after we say the phrase identifying such companies as Iran restricted companies, insert a comma, or a semicolon, however we do it, semicolon, after the quotation mark, to put in a new phrase about, and whether we say defines, and then public funds, the term public funds, so just defines, and then do a quote, public funds, close quote, as monies of the state of Colorado, the regional transportation district, and certain government retirement organizations. Semicolon, and I think there would be a comma after district earlier on line six. I think at least that would give voters some idea of what monies we're talking about being subject to the requirements of the measure.
And it would, I think, let them know that it's not a interfering with local government.
Other than in terms of the local government retirement.
Right.
But
would the board like to use defining rather than defines?
Yeah, we usually would.
Waller, are you comfortable with that?
I think we're just fine with that.
Okay. All right. I just don't like the way the next part reads. So,
how do you want to? You want
to? I don't. And requiring certain public funds to identify. I don't know how a public fund identifies and creates a list. It's not a person.
Well, and it's the board of directors of the public fund.
Right.
I don't know. I just maybe think it's kind of awkward.
Maybe you can just drop the certain public funds there. And so you say, and requiring, and actually drop the two. So you say requiring, colon, and then you have to change, you know, like identification and creation without being sort of actor specific.
Right. Yeah. Just get rid of send.
It's like the worst passive voice
possible.
No actor at all.
If you don't like the passive voice, you can say requiring managers of the public funds or administrators of the public funds, and then keep it in the
active. That may be better.
Active voice.
Rather than the amorphous, someone's taking this action, but you don't know who, whom.
I mean, the list of those companies already exist. I get, maybe that's kind of my problem with it. So there's always, there's already going to be a list. Their duty is to determine if they have any companies on the list. It's not really to identify and create a list, right?
No, I don't think that is right. It is to identify and create a list. There is a list that does currently exist, but that's a list that's produced only by PARA. Other, you know, other entities have not produced their list. Now, I'm guessing that their list would look substantially similar to the one that has previously been created, but this creates the statutory requirement that they create a list. Right now, a list exists only through a policy implication at PARA itself. So, yeah, it exists, but it's not directed that this list be produced, and I think that these other entities will be producing their own lists. And again, I think they look substantially similar, but it's, you know, in the statutory language, it's not required that they that the list be exactly the same.
But I guess my problem is that you only have to identify the ones that you do business with. It's
That's
not
correct.
Like you have to make a list of the 800 companies that may do business. You only have to look at your own investments and decide whether you have anyone on the list. I mean, I think that's a difference. Otherwise, you'd have, you know, I guess different definitions or different people making different assessments.
Well, would it help if you added on line 8? On that first phrase where it talks about identify and create a list of Iran restricted companies in which the public fund is invested or has investments?
That's kind of the language of the initiative, in which the public fund has direct or indirect holdings. So you
as holdings?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so then it's not the all, every
right.
company.
Yeah,
on the world, it's those that are
on your
relative
list
to the public fund.
So that your list
That's
could
correct.
Be zero,
right?
But the way this sounds, your list better be 800, and it better look like everybody else's list of 800,
right.
And then you go.
And that's certainly not our intent.
It's not how it reads. It's just the way you could interpret the question. I mean, do you think then we even need in 4 and 5 identifying such companies as Iran? I mean, don't we say it later again? I just don't know why we say it twice.
Well, I think the first phrase was sort of going along with it. It's a defined term as those that conduct specified business operations. with Iran? I think that's what the tie-in was in terms of defining what companies qualify as Iran restricted and then a public fund individually finding with that definition any companies that it has holdings with. But whether or not because of the use identifying on line four confuses it with the latter identification and creation of the list. Maybe perhaps changing the word on line four from identifying to specifying. I don't know if I still like such, but specifying such companies so that so then you don't have like there's like two identifications. And I think we may need to change, because everything in those phrases is singular as to a specific public fund. And so whether or not we would need to change on line seven, instead of saying the public funds, plural, to say each public fund. Since all of the requirements are then singular.
Right.
Are we ready to take action on? Looks like Mr. Blake is pondering something.
I see us approaching 20 lines.
Okay.
In line seven, do we need to strike identify and since we've already specified them? I mean, it's the creation of a list of those companies, right?
Specify those companies.
Just identify and not the whole phrase.
So just to create the list.
And then is it in which the public fund has or may have holdings? Right? Don't they have a future obligation to?
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm struggling with your divestment.
Yeah, no, I don't mind divestment as much as it was confusing up above.
I agree.
I mean, at this point, we're saying you've already given them notice, so it's not prohibiting investment. I mean, you are actually having to take an action to divest, right?
Because the investment is prohibited, you have to
divest, right?
And I think divest is appropriate there.
Yeah. It doesn't bother me there.
I like that answer.
It just makes sense there.
No, I,
there.
Well, okay. If you know what it means, it made sense above too.
Are you ready to take some actions?
Sure, unless you have, do you have something else?
Hold on.
You have more?
Not yet, hold on.
All right. But as a general, statement. I mean, we struggle with this sometimes, like with this definition of an Iran-restricted company. and I think we're okay just saying specified investments, because to list them out would be too complicated, but we really aren't talking about, you know, a dollar or two. It has to be 10% or
right.
Some.
That's too much detail.
Yeah, 20 million. There's a couple thresholds, but I don't think it's central. You have an opinion on that? No?
No.
I'm good.
You ready?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay. First, I think, because we had adopted language on line 4 and then changed it to specifying from identifying. So I think I move the change on line 4 to specifying.
Second, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
And then we had already done the language on 5 and 6, right, about defining public funds. Okay. So then we're to the changes on lines 6, 7, and 8. And I would move them as shown on the screen.
Second. All those in favor?
Aye.
In terms of the idea, because like we said, it's the prohibition sort of twofold. If you're currently invested, you have to divest. But in terms of future investment, that's prohibited. But we never really talk about, other than we did make the change about has or may have holdings, but whether we need to include a statement that it prohibits sort of future acquiring direct holdings, sort of in the future, because we never really say that. This is all about divesting versus sort of prohibiting.
So maybe on line 11, prohibiting future investment.
We could do it on... on 11 or before we, on line 10,
yeah.
Maybe before the request that managers of indirect
sure.
holdings, after the semicolon on line 10, insert although I'm not sure, you know, this is in that laundry list of what the administrators.
Well, they can't.
Acquiring administrators.
Invest, right.
So going with the IP in terms of requiring administrators of each public fund to, it would start out not invest or not acquire direct holdings.
Not acquire?
Not acquire direct holdings in Iran restricted companies. Semicolon. At least that covers the future action.
Okay.
So I would move the language on lines 10 and 11.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
I'll look up. You guys have anything else? Okay. Then I would move adoption of the title for proposed initiative 1516, number 47, as it appears on the screen.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
All right. That concludes that agenda item. Oh, yeah, I should probably have read it for the record. Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and read it into the record. An amendment to the Colorado Revised Statutes prohibiting the investment of public funds in companies that conduct specified business operations with the Islamic Republic of Iran, and in connection therewith specifying such companies as Iran-restricted companies, defining public funds as monies of the state of Colorado, the Regional Transportation District, and certain government retirement organizations, and requiring administrators of each public fund to create a list of Iran-restricted companies in which the public fund has or may have holdings, send written notice to the listed companies to notify them of the possibility of divestment if active business operations continue, divest from companies that continue to have active business operations after receiving notice from the public fund, not acquire direct holdings in Iran-restricted companies, request that managers of indirect holdings of the public fund avoid participation in Iran-restricted companies, and prepare annual reports regarding the public fund's divestment from Iran-restricted companies. All right. All right. Thank you, Mr. Waller.
Thank you so much for your work.
Can we take a 5-minute break or 10 if you want?
Like Jason was lurking.